Accession number 31693, Reel 12.
Mr. Robson, Reel 12. Basically, come to the end, I think, of Berlin. Is there anything you want to add that we haven't covered?
Yeah, it was, whilst I was in Berlin, we, as I was saying, that we had our range, our own range there. We used to do battalion shoots against other companies, and we and I was chosen for the company shooting team, which we won. And I ended up, we had Major Arnott, who was in charge. We had two Major Arnotts in the battalion. One was never in the battalion at the same time. I don't know why. There were rumours that he used to have punch-ups. I don't know if it was true or not. But Major Jack Arnott and the other Arnott, who got the MC in Borneo. Anyway, I was chosen to be in the team, and I had one of the highest marks, and I was actually chosen to represent the battalion in the battalion shooting team. There was about, I think it was a dozen of us who made up the battalion shooting team, and we went down to Senelager and shot in the British Army of the Rhine Championships. We qualified for Bisley, and we actually went to Bisley that year as well and shot in the British Championships. We didn't come anywhere, but we had a good fortnight at Bisley, and we were actually chosen again in Berlin when we finished. We went back to Berlin. We were chosen to represent the British Army against the Americans and the French. We didn't win. We were using the SLRs, which had the old battle site, which was rather big. And the French actually won it, and they beat the Americans as well. And they had the American weapons, the French. We came last, unfortunately. Against the French won, the Americans were second, and we came last. But it was a representation of the British Army against the Americans. I'd never ever fired the pistol, and it was a 9mm Browning. And for some reason, I don't know why, I remember Major Arnott coming and says, "We've short on one Browning pistol shoot, so I want you to go and shoot." I said to him, "I've never handled a Browning." So I said, "I'll give you a quick half-hour lesson." So the first time I'd ever fired the Browning pistol was actually in a competition shoot against the Americans and the French. So although I did all right, I didn't disgrace myself. I didn't win the competition, which was unfortunate. And it was just after that, of course, I got married as well.
Oh, so you met your girl from
England, yeah.
And you've said how it came about, and you said, you know, your relationship with the family, in effect.
Yeah.
Did it go well from the beginning? That, I mean, there was no resentment from her family at all.
The father wasn't too happy. The mother was quite all right. He was an old-fashioned, what they call an Ost-Prussian. He was from East Prussia. And, of course, he said he wasn't in the army. He was a train driver taking the Russian troops up into... German troops up into Russia. I later found out he was a member of the SA. At that time, I didn't know what the SA was. It was the night of the long knives, or the the where all the windows were broken, and the Russians, I think the Jews were persecuted, and he was a member of the SA, and I did it at that time. I didn't know, and he was taken prisoner by the Russians, and he was in Sachsenhausen concentration camp, which was at that time held by the Russians for denazification. And at that time I didn't know. I found out much later about that. But he was a typical old-fashioned German. It wasn't until later on he accepted me, but it took a lot. But Charlotte, my wife's, my ex-wife's mother, she was all right. She bore no grudges, and the rest of the family were quite good. They had a son and a daughter, and they were all right, no problems.
Was there any, shall I say, did you know, obviously, or did you learn that there were Nazis around within the population, or did they rear their heads in the way? I'm trying to make sense.
Yeah, I mean, even the friends of the family were quite good about it. I mean, they were all right. Yes, there were Nazis about. I mean, it wasn't until later on that I found out Ernst was a Nazi because he was in the SVA, and in the SVA you had to be a Nazi, because they were the ones who actually were more powerful than the SS. It wasn't until much later on in the 30s that the SA were a lot of them were executed by the SS. Especially Rome, who was the head of the SA, because the Himmler actually thought that the Rome was becoming too powerful.
Did you glean from them how they dealt with the concentration camps? I mean, they must have by then, in the 60s, known about them.
I found out, but I also found out from my stepfather. Mm-hmm. Who was in the first? Who was in the Second World War? Was actually clearing out Belsen because he was in the Royal Army Service Corps, a driver, and of course one of his jobs was actually driving the prisoners from Belsen out of Belsen. So I knew about it that way.
But the Germans weren't in denial at all at this point in time in the 1960s. But you know,
in 1960s, no, they weren't in denial. They couldn't be in denial, and especially my ex-father-in-law, with him being a prisoner of the Russians, and although I didn't speak about it, I assumed that it was for denazification. That's what happened, and I did find out from my ex-mother-in-law the reason why he was arrested, and it was because he was a member of the SA in the mid. Well, I don't know when he joined, but certainly when it all blew up, and I don't know when he became. I know he wasn't in the army, but I know that his brother was in the army, and I know that his brother went missing at up in Leningrad, and he was one of them that never came back. Although I did find out later that they still had relatives who were in East Berlin, and his family apparently owned a big farm in East Prussia, which later became part of either Poland or
Poland, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know, but he never spoke about it much. Yeah.
So you were there, I think you said you were in Berlin 2 years, was that?
2 years, and during that time we used to also get down to West Germany. I also did a winter warfare course while I was there at a place called Silberhütte down in the Harz Mountains, and various soldiers, we applied for various courses and to go on to give us a bit, because it was, although Berlin was a big place, it was still restricted. And I went on a winter warfare course down in the Harz Mountains at Silberhütte, and it was 2 or 3 weeks learning how to ski and how to survive in winter conditions. Absolutely brilliant. So it wasn't all doom and gloom, weren't they? But Berlin itself, I loved the city. Absolutely loved it. I've been back once, but I would like to go back again.
So was the 2 years the end of your tour of duty over there as a battalion, or were you being brought back for the problems that would begin to occur in Borneo?
No. We had I remember we were all called into the dining room to be visited by Major General Sir Nigel Port, who had long standing, started off his career.
Ex-DLI.
And because his son was in the battalion as well, Captain Port. And he called us in and said, right, he says, you've done a cracking job here. He says, I think it's about time you got a little bit of sunshine. And then he informed us that we would be going out to Hong Kong for a 2-year posting. I mean, after a 2-year posting in Berlin, it was unusual for an infantry battalion to be suddenly told you were going to Hong Kong. And I mean, the single guys, we said, Hong Kong, great. I mean, the married guys, because I got married in there. And he said, first of all, you would be given leave, but you would be posted to Barnard Castle for 3 months. There's a 3-month staging post before going out to Hong Kong. At that time, my family in England had never met my wife. So we flew from...
Just a minute, drop in there. What was their initial reaction to you marrying a German girl?
I don't think my stepfather was too happy about it. But my mother, no problem at all. No problem.
So what date did you leave Berlin?
We left Berlin round about June, would it be? I think it was... So we had a full 2 years. And of course I had a child as well. My son was born in 63... in Berlin. So I left Berlin I arrived in Berlin, I should say, as a single soldier and left as a married man with a child. And my wife had never been to England before. She'd never been out of Berlin. And we flew out of Gatow Airport, which is the RAF wasn't the civilian airport. Landed in England. I can't remember which airport we landed in now. I can't remember whether it was Manchester or Newcastle. And I arrived at home with a wife and child. So my mother was quite surprised. And I say my wife had never been, my ex-wife had never been to England before. Never been to the northeast, and of course, where she lived, it wasn't. It was a flat. She's never been in there, apart from when she lived.
Big change for her. Big change all around, really.
Oh, big change, and of course, landed and arrived at my parents' house as in a council house.
You got a house, didn't you, straight away, or was it an army house, or what? For your own family, for you, your wife, and your child.
No. And I lived with in-laws. I didn't get a quarter until I actually got to Hong Kong, and she had to live with my parents until because I went out to Hong Kong on my own because it was on the point system because I was newly married and everything else. And we stayed in Barnard Castle for 3 months before going out to Hong Kong.
What were you doing in Barnard Castle for those 3 months?
Not a lot, to be perfectly honest.
Which camp were you in?
I'm trying to think the name of the barracks now. The top of my head, I can't remember. It's the one on the main Barnard Castle Road, and it's the first barracks on the right-hand side. Can't remember offhand what it was, what barracks it was, but I remember it was back into Nissen Huts. And to go for a shower, you had to go. The barracks was on the right hand side of the road, and the Nissen Huts, and on the left hand side of the road, used to be the shower area, ablutions. So it was terrible, absolutely diabolical that people in 1963, soldiers, had to live in those barracks.
Quite a change from where you'd been.
A shock to the system. And I was during that time, I was asked if I would like to go and do a little bit of recruiting at the time. And that was just going to Sunderland Flower Show and just showing the uniform and everything else. And there's also, by the way, in Berlin, that we actually were given our new number two dress. The old battle dress was finished.
And what was the difference between the two?
It was a proper walkout uniform. I mean, the old battle dress was absolutely. I mean, they were hairy. They were awful. Boots and anklets. It was while we were in Berlin, we were given our first battle dress, like a proper uniform to go out in the field. Prior to that, it was battle dress. It was old. So it was not only was it a number one dress, it was also an everyday dress. But it was proper combat trousers, proper combat. It was green. No, it wasn't the. It was just a green uniform.
It wasn't the old patchy uniform.
It was just green. There was no camouflage on it, and nothing. So yeah, it was a change.
This new walkout uniform be better quality material, presumably.
Far, far better quality, and we also issued the forage cap. Because prior to that it was a bury. Although the forage caps weren't that good anyway. It was only later on that we were given forage caps and we were just told to leave them in the lockers, and all our parades after that were with the bury, not a forage cap. So yeah, it was 3 months in Barnard Castle, and it was really it was just getting. Preparation for coming back, well, just de-kitting really of all this stuff that from Berlin, and being given our new uniforms ready for going out to Hong Kong and doing plenty of sport.
Was there any new change in weaponry and radio and signals equipment at this point?
In Berlin?
No, at this point, well, Berlin, really.
We had our radios. I mean, the new equipment that we got in Berlin was the C-42s, B-47s, which are the radios, A-42 Mark 1s, got rid of the old equipment. We also were equipped in Berlin with a Telefunken, which was a radio vehicle, a radio borne, and it was actually channels. You could press a button, you get channel 1, and it was all. I remember that channel 37 on the old Telefunkens, and you could press a button and you could actually call England because it was a radio telephone. And I remember we were always being told, do not tell officers that you've got this telephone to England, otherwise they'll be using it. So that was the main. We didn't have any. Can't remember having any radios in equipment in Barnard Castle, because all the equipment that we got in Hong Kong was actually in Hong Kong. So our personal equipment, we were then giving out our olive greens. Told about what would likely happen in Hong Kong. So just preparing ourselves.
You get lectures,
lectures on Hong Kong.
What were they telling you about Hong Kong?
Just the history of Hong Kong. The Chinese people, the duties we'd be doing out in Hong Kong. Basically, what we're likely to look forward to in Hong Kong. But that was about it. And the water, and of course the typhoons and the water and everything else. But it was after being in Hong Kong, in Berlin, really in a restricted place, we were going to another restricted place, really, because once you got to Hong Kong, there was only on the other side, was Hong Kong was an island, and on the other side was a little bit of land.
New territories.
The new territories, and that was it.
How did you feel then? Because you obviously knew you'd be going off on your own, as you said, and leaving your family behind. How did you feel about going to Hong Kong?
It was a bit hard, because remembering that I was having to leave my wife and John. I mean, she could speak English, so there was no problem in that. My mother was fine, no problem, but my stepfather... he was still a bit of about the war, you know. He spent, because his first wife was actually killed by a bomb, which was dropped on Rye at that time. His wife, and his son escaped injury, but his wife was killed by a German bomb in Rye.
There must have been quite a bit of that still around that she would have to cope with, presumably.
Yeah, and I must admit she did. I was coming home every weekend apart from duties. So I was coming home every weekend, so it wasn't too bad. And we had our embarkation leave at that time as well. And then I must admit, she was quite good about it. There was no other way. It was hard for her.
So, could I ask you about the additional allowances and the way you pay that you would get as a married person? Do you recall what the additions were? Or was it a livable wage for a family man and his wife?
I can tell you how much I got. When I was in Ireland, which was 3 years later, so it must have been about £6 or £7 a week.
Not a high wage.
Not a high wage at all.
And had you any rank at this point in time?
No, I'd actually been recommended for promotion because I did my NCO's course, passed it, no problem at all. But I got into a little bit of trouble, which wasn't serious, but it was enough to get my promotion stopped. And all I did then was, right, just get on and it will come. And it was when I went to Hong Kong I got promoted. So yes, I must admit, I lost about, I would say, 2 years on promotion. But it was my fault. I can't blame anybody else. I was still a young lad, and I was still up for doing daft things.
So Hong Kong was coming, as you said, 3 months after you left Berlin, and what happened? Was there a final parade, or how did you set off on your journey?
In Barnard Castle, no final parade. I remember that our final weekend, we were confined to barracks prior to going out to Hong Kong. So we left right about the Monday, I think it was. I can't remember. It was coach, and we drove down to Manchester Airport, Manchester Ringway, and we flew out from there. And I remember it was a long journey, 28 hours, and we were in civilian clothes, we weren't in uniform.
Was there a reason for this? Was there a reason for you having to wear civilian rather than uniform?
Yeah, well, yeah, because I remember we flew into Istanbul, so that was the reason why we weren't allowed to wear uniform, and we had to have a passport as well. Because prior to that, we didn't have a passport. We always travelled on our ID card. So we had to have passports before that. So we flew to Istanbul. Then from Istanbul, we flew to... I can't remember what it was. Karachi? It was a long journey. And then down into Kai Tak.
Were these civilian aircraft you were flying in?
Yeah, it was civilian.
But RAF.
Yeah, it was an RAF. I can't remember who the flight was with now. But
did you have stewardesses and so on board with you?
Yeah, we had stewardesses, but it was dry. We weren't allowed any alcohol on the journey. I can't remember having alcohol. And as I say, it took 28 hours.
So a battalion must have been more than a few planes, presumably.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how many were on board. I think it was around about 200, would it be? I never took any notice of it, really.
There was 5 or 6 aircraft in board.
Yeah. Probably a company at the time. And we flew out and we landed at Kai Tak Airport. And what an amazing sight.